And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, Trump, as he promised, has gotten off to a quick start. And as he didn't promise, it's all based on the fact that Project 2025 was all written, and he's implementing it, despite the fact that he said it has nothing to do with him. He didn't know what it was, didn't know who did it. But serendipitously, he was able and is able to do one after another all the things that it calls for doing. So he has announced his cabinet choices really 2 months before, and sometimes 3 months before, any previously elected candidate has done so, because most candidates wait till they're sworn in before they announce the government. But his attitude is parliamentary. He got elected, he should be the president instantly. But when you do that, he discovers the people start fighting, and the coalition that just came to power now is faced with its contradictions, and they start fighting with each other, and that's what they're doing. Have you noticed that?
Well, there have been a lot of fights within the Republican Party.
But I'm talking about forgetting the Republican, about the coalition itself, the MAGA coalition.
Yeah, but the Republican Party has become, yes. Well, MAGA has become the Republican
That's
Party.
That's right.
They're virtually interchangeable right now. I mean, there's a few stragglers holding on, but not many.
They won't be there
long.
They've
either been purged or they've left on their own, or they're just content to sit there in silence and let things that are going to happen.
But here's a situation where Laura Loomer, racist and idiot, is going after Elon Musk, another racist, but not necessarily an idiot.
Well, Laura Ingraham or Laura Loomer?
Loomer.
Or both. Okay, well, Laura Ingraham got on the air and basically said, I think it was to Vivek, you know, I wouldn't vote for you. You're Indian.
Oh, good. Very good.
Literally, I mean, right out in the open.
Right.
But she's always been, or over the last few years, one of those that has expressed some very strong.
Well, Laura Loomer said this country was built by white Europeans, not people from third-rate countries like India. Of course, India had a world-class civilization when the Europeans were living in caves.
Yeah. But now we have the fact that, I mean, you've probably seen it, somebody put together how many of the largest corporations, particularly the tech corporations, are run by people from Asia.
Well, more importantly, 70% of the graduate students in AI-related fields in America are people who are here on student visas from abroad.
You know,
70%.
I remember years ago, I was down at alumni weekend at my alma mater, University of Pennsylvania, when it was still regarded with or didn't have the problems that it has today. And my family, we were walking over, and we got to Franklin Field, where they were having the graduation ceremonies for the engineering school. And they had a big television screen set up, and the graduates were sitting on the turf on the field, and somebody was doing some speaking, and it came time to call the graduates up from the engineering school one by one. And virtually every single one of them was Asian. They were either Indian, Pakistani, or Chinese, either China or Taiwanese or whatever. It was incredible. And now we see Elon Musk coming out and Vivek coming out and saying, we know what Trump has said about immigrants, but we need more immigrants and we need engineering immigrants. And we've got to have the H-1B visas to allow these people into the country. And that's exactly what you're talking about, is all of a sudden the MAGA base is saying, no, That's not what we want. We don't want these people here. They're not us, so to speak.
Exactly. So what happens when Laura Luma fights with Elon Musk and appeals to Donald Trump? What now? What does Trump do? What did this great deal maker? What happens now?
Well, as long as Musk stays on his good side, I think Musk wins. I think money wins out. Trump doesn't need the voters anymore. Remember, he said that. Essentially, you elect me and then you don't have to worry about another election.
That's so right. He doesn't have to worry about another election.
Right. The country does.
Yeah.
He doesn't. And
but MAGA, know, like, the MAGA people like Laura Loomer, they're not going to be happy. I mean,
no.
Something will go awry with his coalition.
Well, Trump has essentially used them. And he says, I don't need you anymore either. He's got a bigger pulpit. He's got a bigger megaphone than they are. He's got Truth Social. And he, as we see almost on a daily basis, he can command the quote-unquote mainstream or lamestream media at his command. And he still has Fox at his command. You know, all of these things that people don't understand. Why is he saying this or why is he saying that? The ones that study the authoritarians and the ones who psychologically understand Trump know that for him, and I'm talking about his niece, Mary Trump, and the Ruth Ben Gihotz, that he wants to dominate the everything on a daily basis. He wants everybody talking about him. He doesn't care what they're saying as long as he's the lead story. And this is, he will say anything that's outrageous or, and mixed in with it are some of the more substantive things that he wants to do. But it's all about him all the time. And that's what's happened. That's what's making him different than other people who are presidents-elect. They were content to do things in an orderly fashion. He wants everybody thinking about him as the president already. And and certainly we talked about this last week, Joe Biden has left a vacuum, a communications vacuum, let alone a political vacuum there. And Trump has, what happens with vacuums? They get filled, and he's rushed to fill it.
But let's assume for the sake of this discussion that Laura Loomer and Laura Ingraham really get it up their nose that Elon Musk prevails. And they appeal to the base, which is who they talk to. And the base talks to the Congress people. That's who they talk to. And the Freedom Caucus decides they really don't give a damn what Johnson says or any of the official MAGA emissaries say. They're going to do what they, the Freedom Caucus, thinks they should do and that what they want to do. Meaning the MAGA people have lost control of the House. Now what? Isn't that a serious matter for MAGA, for Trump?
Well, you know, the Republicans, MAGA, however you want to put it, has lost control of the House now for a couple of years. Remember, they...
No, but I understand that. But they hoped that they would be able to do something to further their horrible program in the first 6 months of this administration.
Well, there are certain things that... may unify them, but they're in a current crisis right now. We have to talk about it in that they may not have a speaker. And don't forget, January 6th...
If they don't have a speaker, Trump doesn't get sworn in, right?
Well, there's a question of that. January 6th is coming, and that's when they have to go through this process of confirming the election. And it's supposed to be, the Supreme Court has ruled that it's just a perfunctory matter. But if you don't have a speaker, who runs the show? Because it gets run out of the House.
That's right. It may be a perfunctory matter, but there's a procedure. There's a routine, and you have to follow it.
Yeah.
The routine is strict. This guy calls the meeting to order. The meeting then is addressed by that guy. And everybody says yes. End of story. You can't say no. But if the guy who's supposed to call a meeting to order doesn't exist, there's no meeting.
Yeah. Now, I happen to think that they'll find somebody temporarily. Don't forget, they had a temporary speaker when they had the last bit of nonsense.
True.
I forget who it was. It was that guy.
Wasn't the guy Norman?
The guy with the bow tie.
Yeah, Norman. Norman.
Okay.
From South Carolina.
Whatever. You know, he was glad to get rid of that job.
Yeah.
But they'll find somebody to do that because they'll unite on that. They want Trump in office. Thereafter, they're back to the same old problem. What was it? It took 18 rounds of voting or something like that.
A long time.
To get a speaker because you have these 30-some recalcitrant people. And right now, he only has a two-vote margin to work with, or one-vote margin to work with. It's two votes, but already Thomas Massie from Kentucky has said he ain't going to vote for Johnson for speaker. So now they're down to one vote, and who knows what else is.
And you don't know what Congressman Spatz from Indiana is going to do, because she's not even going to meet with the caucus.
Right, right. So could wind up with Hakeem Jeffries, although I doubt it, which would be a real kicker. And they've changed the rules a little bit, that it's no longer one person could call for a vote on the speaker. It's now 15 people. But
they can get 15.
There's 30-some in this so-called Freedom Caucus. So
right.
We'll see. And they don't want to spend any money. They don't want the government to do anything. But the money behind them wants the government to do things.
Yeah, so the money behind them needs government money to be behind them.
That's correct.
Musk didn't get where he is by being a brilliant businessman. He got where he is because the government gave him billions of dollars, and then he was able to make a business out of it.
And he wants more. You know, he's pushing going to Mars.
Right. I think he should go to Mars. I'd like him there tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, the Republicans, these recalcitrant ones, saying, why should we spend money on Ukraine when we have problems here in the United States to solve? If you apply that logic, why the heck should you be spending money going to Mars?
Well, the point that they really make is, why should we spend money on the Ukraine when there's a lot of problems in the United States that we don't have to spend money on?
That's true. That's true. We're not picking on Ukraine. We're picking on everything.
Everything, exactly.
That involves spending money.
Right.
They tried that in Kansas a few years ago, if you remember.
Yeah, I did. Government fell.
Where they elected this crazy legislature and Kobach to run things. And, of course, the education system started falling apart, and the roads started falling apart. And even the people of Kansas, that famous book, What's the Matter with Kansas, even they woke up a little bit, at least for temporarily, and said, no, we got to get rid of these jokers.
Ramaswamy makes the point that as long as popular culture makes heroes out of athletes and makes fools out of people who want to be scientists and engineers, the country can't advance economically, and you have to bring in people from abroad. And if you don't like that, then you got to change the culture of the country. Whereupon, MAGA said, you're un-American.
Right. We want our football.
Yeah.
Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Those are our boys.
Right.
And when they get out of high school, a small percentage will go to college, even a smaller percentage will be pros. But we don't care.
Right.
We want to spend $25 million to build a high school football stadium with all the amenities and stuff.
But this is an irreconcilable contradiction. Because the people at the base, the people who say we want our football, really don't know what the hell Ramaswamy's talking about. And Ramaswamy, he knows what he's talking about, but he couldn't give a fig about the people at the base for whom he has the greatest contempt. And, that's a short-term recipe. That's a short-term coalition. They have to fall apart.
Yeah. Now, you remember, he and Musk were in different businesses.
Ramaswamy wasn't in any business. He's a swindler, really.
He was a manipulator.
Yeah, he's a currency manipulator.
But it was the pharmaceutical business.
Yeah, but that's like saying Shkreli was in the pharmaceutical business. The guy went to jail for 7 years for taking a $3 item and charging $3,000 for it.
Yeah, yeah. But they you know, it's typical though of the pharmaceutical industry is to, you know, failures in the United States. Before the show, we were talking about this, why drugs are so expensive here, and the craziness that goes on with these middlemen, managers, to distribute drugs and to, you know, jack up prices and markups and nothing that relates really to how much it costs to make the drugs, develop the drugs, and nothing is and why it's so much more expensive here in the United States than when Bernie would take people across to Canada, or people in San Diego would or El Paso would walk across the border to Juarez or to Tijuana to get the same drug for, you know, a huge discount.
Well, one of the reasons, of course, is that the drug companies can charge what they please. There's no control on what they charge. And the other is, as you pointed out to me, in that industry, there's a dozen middlemen between the manufacturer and the consumer, and each one of them has to make a profit. And each one, none of them add anything to the intrinsic value of the product.
Yeah, that's right. The intrinsic value of the product is secondary or tertiary. The whole system is set up for people to make money off of essentially markups.
Yeah, trading it.
Now we were talking about what Mark Cuban is doing. He's sort of like the Costco of the marketplace. He's taking a product that he buys it. He's doing generics, by the way, but he buys the generic and then adds a small amount, a non-Martin Shkreli greed amount, but a small amount for markup to cover his costs and everything, and then puts it out there. But
I'll give you an example so people know what you're talking about. One of the most popular drugs for older people is a drug that you have to take every day to control your cholesterol. You don't want to have a stroke. You take this drug if you have a high cholesterol count. You want to bring your cholesterol down so that you don't have a stroke. You don't get crippled or you don't die. A three-month supply of the generic form of this drug costs $90. If you go to CVS, you can get a discount. You can get it for $60. If you go to Kuban, you get the same thing, exactly the same thing, for $6.
Yeah. It makes no sense.
No. Well, but it makes sense if you're in the business of making money, but not if you're a consumer.
Another aspect to it. The drug companies spend more money on marketing than they do, in some instances, on product development and research. We had this last week or so, RFK Jr. come out and said, we got to go back to the old system of banning drug commercials on television. The over-the-counter stuff like aspirin is one thing, but none of these other drugs, the Ozempics and, everybody listening probably knows half a dozen of them, treating diseases that they never heard of and being warned that do not take this drug if you're allergic to it, and wondering, how do I find out if I'm allergic to it if I don't take it? But all those millions spent on advertising, and Kennedy says, let's get rid of that. That this is something that the doctors should be dealing directly with patients on.
Yeah, and the people who develop these drugs and the doctors who are supposed to read the papers, they know whether you're likely to be harmed by the drug or helped by the drug. That's their business to know.
Right.
Unless you become an expert like they are already experts, you're not going to be able to know.
Yeah. Well, but the drug companies have formed sort of like the companies that sell these erectile dysfunction drugs. They've figured out a way to bypass your family doctor. They say, you call up this number and we'll have you speak to a doctor, one of our doctors, who will determine whether it's right for you. And you know what kind of a examination you're going to get. Everything is always going to be right for you.
Of course, right. Maybe not everything, but the very thing you're calling about, that'll be right for you.
Yeah, most everything. And that's what they're doing on that. So they've created a whole new, cottage industry of on medicine. And it's sort of, you know, we've also had a cottage industry kind of related on the healthcare, where they, you know, the Medicare Advantage people want you to sign up. If you need, unlike Medicare, if you need an authorization, you have to talk to one of their doctors, or in many cases, just a nurse or a physician's assistant, who will, instead of trying to peddle a drug, they do this the opposite. They try to stop people from getting procedures. We saw a few weeks ago, at least somebody in the general populace decided to take things into his own hands, and they think that that's the motive for him to allegedly murder the CEO of United Health, that the bullet casings deny was one of those things, one of the methods.
And then, most astoundingly, a lot of so-called liberal columnists say, murder is horrible, murder is horrible. Why? How could this guy even think to do this kind of thing? Instead of saying, why is it that so many millions of people applauded what he did? People who themselves have been raised as I've been raised and who think murder is not a good thing to do, a bad thing to do. It is a bad thing to do. And yet they applauded this. But they don't ask the question, why do these people support that, applaud that? They just condemn it. And then they wonder, why don't people support their point of view?
Then you get the opposite analysis, which says, well, here's this kid who, again, allegedly, we use that word, murdered the CEO, and that's a bad thing. And they're saying, yeah, but the CEOs or these companies have murdered thousands or tens of thousands of people by denying them care or denying them drugs. They're mass murderers.
And here's a question. If a company is an individual, if a company is a person, if the company has political rights like any other individual, citizen, right?
Yeah.
So how does it get punished? If you don't shoot the CEO for murder, who gets executed for the murder?
You know, there's that old saying, the Supreme Court has made corporations in the people, right?
Right.
And somebody, I can't remember who, came up with the quip, I believe a corporation is a person when Texas executes one of the corporations.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. And that's what people are responding to when they applaud this murder.
You know, so you get fined, you know, $10 million or $30 million, and you write it off the cost of business. You take it off your taxes as the cost of business. And you've made, you make $100 million and you pay a $30 million fine. You're $70 million to the good.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, I don't know if that's what's being taught in business schools, but that's the way I think a lot of people go there think.
That's certainly how Trump thinks. He tells you that's how he thinks.
Sure.
Speaking of Trump, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, a lot of these are intertwined, though. They overlap, if you're doing the Venn diagram. You know, for years, my son's specialty is on the environment. And he's studied about the fossil fuel industry and how they rig the science and how they deny certain facts and how they've done it. And, of course, they learned that from the tobacco industry, for how many years that the tobacco industry denied that nicotine was a dangerous thing or tars were a dangerous thing. So all this gets back to, we make money by risking people's health.
You know, That's exactly how they do make money, right.
Or asbestos or fossil fuels now with climate change, or now with certain drugs, or with healthcare. It's a continuum.
It's a shell game. This is a highly profitable shell game. Most shell games is just a guy in a street corner. He makes a few bucks. These guys are on every street corner. They operate stores. They operate gigantic factories. But it's the same thing. Now you see it, and it's not there. But I got it.
Yeah, you know, you steal, you know, $100, or you know, $1,000, you go to jail. You embezzle $100 million, and you become a folk hero, and you know, you don't serve as much time as the guy that walks in and robs the local bank.
Well, let's look at immigration. Trump and all the MAGA people. Their main concern is illegal immigrants. They're robbing Americans, right? They're taking away your jobs. The right. solution to the housing crisis is deport the immigrants. The houses they live in will then be available to the homeless people, and the end of the housing crisis will be at hand, right? Elon Musk is an illegal immigrant who, through duplicity and lying, got American citizenship. According to the rules that Trump has announced and that Miller plumps for and that Holman says he's going to open up these gigantic deportation camps, Musk's citizenship should be revoked because he came on a student visa, never went to school, but went into business instead, lied about that, and then applied for a green card and a citizenship, and he got it. The whole thing is fraudulent. If it was Joe Blow down the street who's cutting grass for a living, he'd be deported. They'd revoke his citizenship and deport him. Trump is not going to deport Musk. Musk is not a danger, although Musk, he may not be a rapist, but he has 17 kids or 14 kids or 15 kids with four different women, three of whom he's not married to. And he was himself raised by an apartheid-supporting family in South Africa, and he himself is a supporter of a neo-Nazi group in South Africa. Why shouldn't he be deported?
Well, then they might have to deport Trump's wife, too, but that's a, you know, it's a parallel type of story.
That's exactly right. I'll stick with Musk.
Yeah, well, they stick with Musk. Don't forget, his big thing is we need to repopulate the country. But we have to repopulate it, as you said, with white people.
Yeah.
The birth rates are going down, as they have been in Western society and Japan.
In all industrial societies.
Yeah, for a number of years. And the only way the United States can stay competitive and to expand is through immigration. That's the way people are not having more children. They're exercising the right. Now, Musk is trying to, you know, change that with some sort of bully pulpit type of stuff.
Well, of course, that was one of the concerns of the original anti-abortionists in the 19th century who were concerned that there weren't enough white children being born.
Well, they were concerned about Catholics.
They were concerned about Catholics. They were concerned about blacks. They were mostly concerned that the blacks and the Catholics were propagating, but the Christian white Protestants were not.
Right. It's an old story. Just different groups.
That's right.
All right.
Well, we're into the Trump era, the second Trump era. We're into the new year almost. Next time we meet will be the new year.
Yes.
And we're done with this year.
We are. We want to wish our listeners a happy and, more importantly, a healthy new year after all the things we talked about in health. Yeah. And it's, you know, we're going to have January 6th coming up quickly, January 20th coming up just as quickly. It's going to be a rocky start, and maybe a rocky.
And in any case, the rent is too damn high.
The rent is too damn high. See you next year.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.